In most economic models, there's a potential trade-off between how many children you have and how you treat them. The work in this area starts with the economist Gary Becker, who wrote on the economics of the family. One of Becker's key points is quite simple. Imagine that you have six babies in your family, and these six babies are sitting around trying to learn how to paint. As one parent, it's very hard for you to teach any one of these babies full-time, using your complete attention, how to paint properly. You have six babies you need to look after. Maybe each of the six babies will get a bit of instruction, but here you have chosen a larger quantity of children, and the result may be that each of the six babies doesn't quite learn how to paint as well. To consider one extreme example of this principle, consider the woman known as Octomom. She was called Octomom because in 2009 she gave birth to octuplets, which is eight children. She actually has in total 14 children. Recently, Octomom admitted that she was on the verge of going bankrupt. She has one toilet for her 14 children, and sometimes the only way she can, quote-unquote, take care of them is simply to lock them in their rooms. As you might expect, the 14 children of the Octomom probably are not getting a very good upbringing. In this model, the alternative scenario is that each family has a very small number of children. Imagine, for instance, that each family has only a single child. You then have the parents being able to devote really a pretty large share of their attention to tutoring that child, teaching that child how to live, educating that child, watching over that child, doing whatever is necessary to make sure that child has a good upbringing. These families have chosen a lower quantity of children, but in economic terminology, it's said they have chosen a higher quality of children. Please don't be offended by this term. The word quality does not mean to suggest that only children or children from small families have higher moral worth. It's simply a way of saying that perhaps the family is able to invest more in each child. Now that's the theory, but what do the data actually say? Well, then it gets more complicated. If we simply look across different societies, rich and poor, we do find a consistent pattern. In societies where the number of children is large, families tend to be poorer and they invest much less in education. In families and societies where the number of children per family tends to be small, families are wealthier and the parents invest more per child in the education of those children. Still, this is a correlation and it need not be a causal pattern. So, for instance, simply by having fewer children, a poor family does not necessarily ensure that it will be able to treat its remaining children better. What happens when we look at the data on causality? Well, it's a very interesting natural experiment to look at families which all of a sudden have unexpected twins. Adjusting for some variables such as age, this is more or less a random outcome, whether a given pregnancy gives rise to twins or not. What we find in developing countries is that when families have unexpected twins, those families do not, in fact, end up investing less in the education of each child. That is, at this particular margin, there does not seem to be much of a trade-off between the quantity of children and the quality of children. If anything, when the extra children come along, the mother does have to work much harder and she suffers more, but the children themselves seem to do just fine compared to having the family with a smaller number of children. There's also data from China's one-child policy. You can think of this in some regions as providing an exogenous shock to the number of children in families. The families which end up with the smaller number of children do not seem to be investing more in the education of each particular child. Again, we see that at this margin, we do not observe a strict trade-off between the quantity of children and the quality of children. When these results first started coming out, it was very much a surprise to economists because it indicated the data from the real world were not in every way supporting the most traditional economic model. So what room then is there for this notion that there's a trade-off between the quantity of children and the quality of investment in each child? It turns out there is a very relevant pathway, and it's really this pathway that seems to matter. Think of it this way. In a given society, when women become better educated, those women both wish to have a smaller number of children, and those women are able to do more to educate those children. So families will be smaller, and each child in the family will, on average, have more quality investment in education. But this only works when the mother herself is becoming more educated. Simply changing the number of children in the family, keeping constant the mother's level of education, that doesn't seem to do much for quality investment per child. So the lesson here is pretty simple. If you're tempted to blame overpopulation for the poor quality of education, simply lowering the number of people per family probably isn't going to get you anywhere. But if instead you take the path of educating mothers and educating them early in their lives, perhaps before they become mothers, then you will end up on a track where families tend to be smaller and where families tend to invest more per each child. To read more on these very interesting topics, there is a considerable literature. I would suggest that you start by Googling these keywords.